Hi, guys. Who feels like playing trivia? Does anybody know Vanilla Ice's real name? His given name? Yes! Yes, we have a winner. That was my my one and only moment of glory playing trivia back in the day, so I just was inspired. Robert Van Winkle. Okay, so I'm gonna basically just dive right in, but before I do that, I want to thank you all for coming out to see us tonight. Very much appreciated. I love all these different faces from everywhere that I'm seeing. Thanks to Hemingway's for doing this. This has been going on for a long time. I was thinking about this the other day. I did my first poetry reading here. I'm kind of dating myself here, but like in 1994, 95, something like that. I did my first poetry reading here as part of this series. And of course, I cannot not thank Joan and Don and Jimmy for putting this all together every year. You guys do an amazing job, so thanks. Okay, I'm gonna try to read mostly new stuff. That's gonna be my theme for tonight, but this one is a bit of a classic, and you can see this one in Pittsburgh Poetry Houses, which is a really cool project. I don't think they're doing new ones anymore, but they're online, Pittsburgh Poetry Houses. This is called Comeback. Karen Carpenter, excuse me, I'm gonna start that again. Comeback. Karen Carpenter descends the airplane steps in a fur parka, face pared to cheekbones and teeth. She looks wiser, tan and lined. I interview her on late night TV. "What's your secret?" I ask, and she laughs, cupping her mouth with one hand. "Lemon juice, I swear by it. Buy them fresh, cut them in half." She describes lying on towels, squeezing drops the length of her naked limbs, massaging them in. "Mmm, tartar sauce, baby." That's my big punchline. The audience hoots and cackles. Karen lowers her eyes, smiles without blushing. After commercial, she sings, "Close to You." I stare at her close-up in monitor two. First publicity tour since they revived her, and I never asked where she's been, what she's seen. Thank you. Here's some new stuff. Non-consensual reality. Slice a hole in the machine and climb inside. Wool coats in a wardrobe, a box of water and wires, a steaming buffalo sacrifice. Sit in the cockpit, sleeves brushing our cheeks, names stitched in the lining. Look across the river. The child will reappear, walking the concrete slope. Hamlin to Hollywood, and this one, geez, all my notes about where these things are published are in the front here. So this one is in a really neat magazine called Grassland, and they actually pay their poets, which is kind of an anomaly these days. So if any of you guys are looking for places to publish, they will actually pay you. So that's a nice thing. Hamlin to Hollywood. Anna does not remember passing beneath the tall white letters, scrub crunching under our feet, the waiting van on a black road. She remembers the empty pool where we all rode bikes and trikes under a full moon while backbeat thumped inside the mansion. The carnival faces of men, silk ties unknotted. They clapped when we sang, laughed when we smoked. She remembers the fat producer and his poop jokes. A smooth violet stone she hid under our bed in a cough drop tin. Singing for the president, the red and blue jumpers we had to wear on stage. She remembers trying to lift Heidi off the bathroom floor, trying to tell me Paul shot himself in Vegas, but she couldn't. She hung up the phone. She's sitting at her vanity, tying off her arm, trying to bust out of time again, but Anna does not remember. We were sisters. How we crept from our mother's garden at dawn to join the children's parade, holding hands and singing along, following a man into the mountain. Hewlett Pines. Porch swing shadows made the child lonely, any burnished second that escaped with no one else to witness. As she hummed, she wished a presence toward her neighborhood, a shape to sense as distant, leaning on a mailbox. The sun moved on to cast the profile of a man carrying a rod, and when he lifted it to his lips, coyotes howled, parents thrashed in their sleep, a streetlight fizzled. She shut the back door with a click and trod wet grass to join the silent crowd, lugging blankets or stuffed bears. She gazed at leaves breathing on their branches like elf laundry, the breeze mild, the song hers only, as the mountain closed around her head. So as you can probably tell, I get a little bit stuck on these fairy tale themes sometimes. So here's another one in that vein. Zen of Snow White. Three dwarfs escaped her snores and jabbing limbs to creep out early, snick shut the cottage door. Before the mines, they turned down a narrower path to a straightway bearded with pines where grandfather sat cross-legged on his log. They told of the runaway who slept flung across seven beds, who gathered poison mushrooms and wet firewood, attracted vermin and witches. What should we do, they begged. You will serve the story, grandfather said. I can only tell you how it ends for the girl. And here's another one. Hansel and Gretel part ways. After the oven, the peppery stench and green smoke searing their lungs, they flee. But in the small clearing, she grabs her brother's arm. Wait, the house! So they drench the witch's corpse, bloating walls where water splashed bread, and they stay, rationing door frames and trim, until Gretel, watching birds peck among tree roots, says, we must learn to hunt, and Hansel sets down his pail. We should find Papa before the snow. Having seen cocoons big as women deep in branches, Gretel cannot unsee them, or footprints smaller than hers, or the chimney glimpsed and skirted a whiff of shortbread. So she breaks the promise she'd whispered each night into Hansel's cage. So now she says, they don't want us, but he shakes his head and in the morning has left, taking his pack and a modest piece of the floor, and Gretel never finds him, not a sign or a shoe. Though each fall she searches, lengthening her pebble trail to the leaning sugar house she patches with wood and mud. Childish thinking. When you badmouth the world and human beings, I sigh and nod like I'm wise instead of blessed. How to defend a sunset or soap bubbles floating across the park? My agreement is not fake, yet always stings as if someone dissed my hometown team, as if I care about sports. I might be a monster for tolerating heinous imperfections that have yet spared me and fed my gratitude for bright workday commutes, ducks grazing the edge of the river. Even the humans I enjoy most are not who I thought, including us both. Like a child of quarreling parents, I eat all blame since this is my dream. When strangers dance in the street and hug, I don't know what they're celebrating, but it seems like a good night to be alive. And this is going to be my last one. Before I read this one, I want to do two little plugs. I want to echo the plugs that have been made for the Squirrel Hill Poetry Workshop reading on Wednesday, June 6th. I will be there. So a little self-promotion, but also for all the squirrels. Some of these poems that I have just read have been perfected in their workshop, so I'm like in all the workshops, so I owe them a debt of gratitude. And this next one I'm going to read, this next poem, my final poem, I have to give a shout out to the Pittsburgh Writers Studio because this poem is brand new. It's already been taken, which like never happens with me because if you know me, you know that I labor over these things for literally decades before I even start sending them out. But this one, Pittsburgh Writer Studio, every Sunday at the Squirrel Hill Library at 2:00, anybody can show up. It's great fun and there's always a prompt. And so and I'm just gonna explain it because I have it here in this poem anyway. The prompt was this poem called Happiness by Jane Kenyon. And so we just do free writes, and that's what I love about it. It's kind of a unique workshop that way with the actual creating, not so much critiquing work that we've, you know, been holed up in our houses working on, but this is just creating it. So this poem that I'm about to read to you came out of that, and I think that workshop was like maybe a month ago, and it's already going to be showing up in the Eunoia Review in the beginning of June. So shortest turnaround ever for me. So, The Uncle You Never Knew About, After Happiness by Jane Kenyon. When he sputters above town in that single-engine plane, he inspects the bright palatial landscape, its drying bedsheets, roaming dogs, two girls who look up and wave as they climb a hill. Who could sleep through the splendor of this town at mid-afternoon? But your uncle has flown all this way not to judge you ungrateful, but to save you from the hollow Sunday hours of your life. This portly pilot is nothing like the drunk uncle, the bitter laugh uncle, the famous molesting uncle. Is he Santa? Is he your mother's brother or your father's? Or no blood relation like your parents' school friends? They never mentioned him. It turns out your mother met this uncle in town, in front of the supermarket, when he asked for directions. He opens his hand and presents, oops, I skipped a line, sorry. I'm gonna go back a little bit. They never mentioned him. It turns out your mother met this uncle in town, in front of the supermarket, when he asked for directions. Now he stands at your door. You know him before he speaks. He opens his hand and presents the nose an unkind person snatched off your face. Thanks.